peer-to-peer, that's what I've been doing, is based on, hey, if I can help you, I'm going to help you mentality, and I try to get everybody else around us on board in that sense. Basically, in my demographic is not a lot of Hispanic community in it, so I wanted to have more of a face for Hispanic culture. I've also had other coworkers that have asked me, hey, I noticed you've changed a lot. What have you done different, or what's helping you? That's what I would train my trainees. They look like numbers to you, but they all have families to go to. So at the end of the day, when I take my headset off and they all went home, I know I did a good job. That's what matters to me.
Welcome to Respond to Resilience, along with my co-host, Bonnie Rumley, LCSW, EMT, and Dr. Stacy Raymond. I'm David Dashinger. In this episode, we'll be speaking with Josephine Rios, law enforcement dispatcher for the Broward Sheriff's Office, and she'll be talking about bringing awareness to the mental health for 911 dispatchers and talking about her business, Latinas of 911. We invite you to like and subscribe, YouTube, Respond to Resilience, Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc., and Responder TV, all the podcast platforms, and BBS Radio, and check out our website, respondertv.com, for past episodes and guest information. We'll be right back to speak with Josephine after this.
In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job. In this family, up to a quarter of 911 dispatchers have symptoms of PTSD. In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis while responders are quietly suffering. In this family, many struggle with job-related stress, burnout, trauma, sleep disruption, substance abuse, and marriage problems. In this family, we can help the helpers with vital information and resources, resilience strategies, and success stories of overcoming the obstacles. In this family, no one is alone. Welcome to Responder Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacy Raymond, and Bonnie Rumley, LCSW, EMTB.
And we're pleased to welcome Josephine Rios to Respond to Resilience. Josephine is the founder of Latinas of 911, and she's currently a 911 call taker, law dispatcher for the Broward Sheriff's Office, where she's served for the last 13 years. And she started her own business, Latinas of 911, to help promote diversity, equity, and inclusion under emergency services. Her mission is to bring awareness of mental health for 911 call takers and dispatchers. Josephine, welcome to Respond to Resilience.
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me.
Nice to have you.
Josephine, I'd like to start by asking you, share with us your story, how you became involved in being a 911 dispatcher.
My brother started in law enforcement, and he was like, hey, you should probably try dispatching because we're always hiring. So I tried for a while with Miami-Dade. It didn't pan out. And he's like, try another agency. But I'm like, that's where we grew up. That's what I know. So I tried another nearby agency, and that's where I got hired through Broward on my first time trying. Hmm. I had a lot of practice with Miami-Dade, so.
And you've been a dispatcher for 13 years, right, or so?
Yes, 13 years. Okay. I started June of 2010.
Can you talk to us about Latinas of 911? How did you get started, and what are your main goals and missions with it?
Well, in seeing 911 Wonder Woman and Ashley, also the Raspy dispatcher, and she's based off California. Sarah Weston's on Northern Florida. So when I saw what they were doing, I'm like, man, we don't have this on the South Florida end. I think it would be great in having this platform and having other people, because normally when we get training, especially through our job, it's very tailored to law enforcement and fire. It's not really 911 dispatching material, so I thought that would be a good way to get other 911 dispatchers.
Tell us a little more about Latinas of 911. Like, who are members? Who would be a typical member? And what do you offer to your community?
It's starting out. It's really new. So members, anyone's welcome that wants to help out. And basically, in my demographic is not a lot of Hispanic community in it. So I wanted to have more of a face for Hispanic culture and have more supervisors and stuff like that. So anything that I can bring, mentorship or leadership training, that wants to go up the ladder is pretty much what I want to do.
And do you have training scheduled at this point? Are you delivering any kind of virtual or in-person training?
No, that's what I'm working into. I want to do the ENP certification. So once that I start that, and obviously I've been networking a lot more since I started Latinas with other groups that have helped me, and they've been amazing in giving me resources.
So, Josephine, my father actually was a 911 dispatcher at the end of his police career. And I saw the wear and tear that that had on him. So what would you say are the red flags that come up to notice and know that you're hurting from your job?
It's basically behavior change. So there, you could have someone that's having anger issues at work or withdrawal issues, someone that's normally happy, go lucky, and then all of a sudden they just change their behavior. And because of that, on my own experience, I've been able to notice other coworkers that may be having challenges and try to help them out. I've also had other coworkers that have asked me, hey, I noticed you've changed a lot. What have you done different, or what's helping you?
Would you feel comfortable sharing a little bit of that with us about what you've done to address some of those things and what you would recommend to those colleagues?
Absolutely. I actually was threatened by one of my managers to refer me to EAP because I was very angry most of the time and I was always having issues with coworkers. But I decided to go on my own to see one of our therapists. I saw Dr. Kushner, and I told her I'm having a lot of anger issues at work, and I feel like everything annoys me. I'm very irritated all the time, and it doesn't matter how I try to address it. It's not helping me. Mm-hmm. And I definitely was very adamant, and I don't want to be in medication. I was like, I don't know. I don't feel like I want to be on medication. I just trying to figure out on my own. It's just like, well, we could talk about it. We could try a few things before we get, you know, there. And I started first, she would give me like exercises to do. First, write it down before you say something to someone out loud. And I was like, yeah, that worked for a hot minute. And then I was like, nah. So she was like, okay, let's try checking out your thyroid, your hormone balances. Everything came out normal. Then it progressed to me going to see my primary. And after that, they gave me like a review test of things that I was feeling at the time. If I felt like I was withdrawing from family members, if I felt sad, it actually says, you know, do you feel like harming yourself or others? And based on that, most of the answers that you give, they're like, okay, we're going to try antidepressants. And I started first at 37.5 milligrams. Now I'm at 150 milligrams. So when I first started out, they give you kind of to see how it goes, how it works. It would work fine, okay, when I first started. And then I felt like I was back to square one. So then they would keep adding dosages. So that's where I'm at right now. I've been on them for, I want to say, 5 years now. I've been on it for 5 years. And so far, it's been working for me. I'm pretty calm, and I notice the difference when I'm not on them. I forget to take them.
Okay, yeah.
My wife notices. She's usually like, honey, did you take your pill today? So it does matter. It does, and it does help. The only thing, side effect I had initially when I first started taking them is my appetite changed. I wasn't eating everything in sight. But other than that, I didn't really have any other symptoms.
Really powerful stuff, I think, for police organizations to understand. We don't have to tear everything down. And if we focus on the most important job, the most important position is the chief of police, and we get that hire right, everything else takes care of itself. It really does. Organizational culture, I think if we change that, Matter of fact, I know we changed that. We're going to see cops come back. We're absolutely going to see cops come back. We're not going to have people, good people left to do this job as hard as it is, but we now create cultures where we don't even value them or we don't appreciate them. Hopefully a lot of leaders that read this book and say, you know what? I need to get into therapy. I need to talk to somebody. I need to get a coach. I need to freaking figure out who I am. I just hope that happens because you'd be welcome to join the club because we're all in this thing together.
I just want to add, just for anybody who's listening, that, you know, if someone does recommend medication, your doctor, your therapist, that it's not that there's something wrong with you. It could be the combination of perhaps you're somebody that just doesn't produce enough of a neurochemical like serotonin or norepinephrine. And there are medications that can boost those neurochemicals, and then you're at the level of everybody else. The other factor to consider is sometimes symptoms manifest or they don't manifest until there's enough stress, right? So when you have a stressful job, like any first responder, you may notice that at some point your mood is changing or your anxiety level is changing. Sleep patterns, eating patterns, whatnot. And then again, not to feel any embarrassment, shame over, you know, the recommendation that maybe medication will help, but that may be the solution at that point to help regulate your neurochemistry.
Yeah, and I was adamant not doing it because usually coworkers were like, oh, she's taking crazy pills. I've had other coworkers that were on anxiety medication or antidepressants, and they get labeled something at work. So that's why I was like, nah, I don't want to do it. But when I saw the difference in me, I was like, no, it helps. And I'm advocated. I mean, regardless now, if I have certain coworkers that judge it a certain way, I still am like, look, it's helped me. It's helped balance my life, my family outside as well, how I act. So I'm big in anyone trying something that helps them.
Well, I commend you for talking so openly about it because even in what you just said, we're seeing that you have to fight a stigma just to take care of yourself.
Right. Right.
You know, no one would ask you why you were taking insulin if you had diabetes. No one would ask you why you were taking an anti-cholesterol med if you had high cholesterol. And in our view, it should be no different for this. And as Stacey said, for some people, it truly is genetic and biologically based. There could be a lack thereof of something. And so the medication helps people actually neutralize, level out, and have a good baseline to work from. Mm-hmm. And that way, when you have the biology piece under control, you can start working on your coping skills and building some of that. And along those lines, I wanted to ask you specifically if you had any suggestions for other dispatchers, because I've never been a dispatcher, but I imagine you're sitting there, everything is going in your ears from the calls, all the sounds from the family, sometimes the patient, sometimes the chaos of the other first responders. And I'm wondering, are there things that you've built in to be able to de-stress after you hang up on those really difficult calls?
Taking a break.
Okay.
And we are not allowed normally to take long periods of break other than assigned breaks.
Right.
So not too long ago, I had a coworker that she started like, oh my God, these people. And I just had another cardiac. It was like the second one I've had today. What the hell? And I was like, take a break. You can take a break. Put yourself on follow-up or restroom and go take a break. Take a breather. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you have to be able to show compassion to your coworkers when you see them having those outbursts. Because some people are like, just start seeing them like, what's wrong with them?
Mm-hmm.
I get it together. But sometimes our supervisors alone, they're up on the bridge and they don't address it. They don't show that compassion the person's needing at the moment. Mm-hmm. That's why when I recognize it, if I'm at work, I'm like, hey, just take a break real quick. You're fine. You can take a break. And if they ask you, just tell them, hey, I had a really rough call and I need 5 minutes.
In terms of what you're talking about, they're kind of like tools to help you cope on the job. And let's say you have a difficult call, one that, you know, it's really stressful, high adrenaline rush, that type of thing. Do you have any other tools or skills you use to cope with something, you know, right after that call to kind of, you know, give yourself opportunity to decompress and come back down so you can keep doing the job?
Usually one of my coworkers that I started the wellness stuff at work, she does the breathing technique, like box breathing. So she helped us do that one time in roll call to kind of de-stress. And she was like, you can do it even during your call. Like if you notice you're getting anxious. I have worry stones that I've given people at work to fidget mm-hmm. with when they're on mm-hmm. a call as well to help them calm them down. There's different tools that I've tried to give everyone, not just myself, mm-hmm. to kind of de-stress. And I wanted to start also kind of like a self-care tote to give them that has different stuff, you know, like a blanket or eye mask or affirmations, stuff like that they can mm-hmm. use outside as well when they feel, or on break, it can help also if they need to take a breather.
Yeah, we've spoken to other 911 call takers who, you know, run into that situation and, you know, literally the bathroom is the only place where they can kind of be alone and get away from the, you know, the stimulation, the call center and everything that's going on and just come down. And, you know, sometimes it's meditation or, like you said, breathing. Seems like it's so important to have that a tool you can use in those situations so you can come back and continue to do a good job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because our buildings are like category 5, so we don't really have windows either. Mm-hmm. So like you can just stare outside the window and like de-stress.
Right.
Like literally go outside for you to walk or see in nature, breathe fresh air.
Well, maybe in your toolkits, maybe you could include some little flashcard pictures of the beach or the woods or a lake or, you know, right. Stacey and I tell people to suck on mints or things like that just to start getting saliva produced again to calm down your central nervous system.
Essential oils.
Yeah. Yeah. You can get little vials and they could even right. have that while they're taking the call.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
All right, lavender is good for relaxation.
Yes, I love lavender.
Yeah, see? So put that in the bag.
Yes. Eucalyptus and lavender are my favorite.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Very soothing.
And then those squeeze balls, right, that you can use.
Stress ball. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
I actually just gave them some, I forgot what they were called, but they're squishy, like, toys. They look like gummies almost. Most of the guys at work were like, can you eat these? I'm like, no.
So speaking of that and your coping kit, you know, social support seems like super important to on the job, off the job, maybe peer support. What are your thoughts and strategies in terms of building that network?
Well, we started peer support in our agency. I actually did a training not too long ago for it. It was 2 days. And we still have to interview for the position as well as work, because normally it's someone that gets picked by your peers to do it. I wanted to do it because based on my own experience. So I just interviewed for that not too long ago. But even if I'm not picked, I always tell them, like, I'm already doing stuff to kind of help my coworkers anyways in that sense.
Is there kind of a good reason to develop a social network outside of work that can help you, you know, kind of get through and maybe, you know, bounce back from a tough shift or a tough week at work?
Yes, actually, it does help a lot. I've actually done team building exercises. I started that at work also last year. And it helps us de-stress and not think about work. And I try to implement ways that they can de-stress by doing activities. So we did bowling one time. Another time we did like a craft painting with a twist. So they can do more hands-on things versus just alcohol. Some events had alcohol. You know, we're all adults. Can't stop people from drinking. But for the most part, I try to show them like you can do outside hobbies that can probably help you de-stress. And then you also get to know your team members, you know, outside of work, what they like. And, you know, you can implement it at work as well.
Yeah, I'll give a plug for Stacey and her organization, Responder Wellness, Inc. They put on several events a year. And Stacey, feel free to mention what they are that are designed for first responders. Just kind of let loose and have fun, kind of healthy stuff. And they're great. They seem to really be great for bonding and you know, coming back to the real world.
So we have an annual retreat, happens every summer. You know, we have great food, we have raffles, music, people can just chit chat and catch up with each other and hopefully not talk too much about work. We actually have Thrills Night coming up, which is like a, it's like a very large indoor playground. It's like a bounce house, and they have trampolines. And so people of all ages can go, but it's just for first responders on this one special night, and it's free. And they can bring their families and just have a blast. Sometimes we have competition, you know, between like police and fire, and it can be a lot of fun, because, you know, there's more to life than just their job, and they need to be reminded of that. We also have a game dinner every year, and we have exotic meats, and we have mystery meats that people get an award if they can actually guess what the meat is. And so we've had things like kangaroo. Oh,
tastes like chicken.
Yeah, that's right. Everything tastes like chicken. And we have raffles, and again, we have music, and it's a time for people to just sit down and have a meal together and connect, because I think that's one thing that's missing, you know, for first responders. The other thing that we notice is leadership and organizations, team leaders. We know that they need to shift their perspective, you know, with regard to first responders that work there. And so, you know, how do you form a more person-centered culture? What are your suggestions about that?
It's kind of hard when you're not in leadership roles, supervisor-wise, because I'm not a supervisor at work. I'm a comm 3, so I'm peer-to-peer. So peer-to-peer, that's what I've been doing, is based on, hey, if I can help you, I'm going to help you mentality, and I try to get everybody else around us on board in that sense, because we don't always have leaderships willing to participate in it, or it becomes more of a battle of ego with your managers. Mm. Well, who did you ask to do that? Why are you doing that? Who told you to do that? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of hard sometimes. So I try to stay within the lines where I can do stuff. So it would be great if supervisors did get on board and do stuff for the people, but it's not mandatory. They don't get leadership training. But I'm doing stuff outside of work, and most of the time I'm paying it on my own for training. My job's not doing it. So because of budget, you have to want to better your centers. Some of my leaderships did go into the team building, and they were participating, which was good because, like I said, they got to know their employees, what triggers them, what they like, so they can assist them and become better supervisors that way.
Can you talk a little bit about the South Florida peer support training process? And in every region, we're finding it's different. Every state is different. But just fill us in a little bit what that looks like down in South Florida.
Well, our agency, they partnered with NSU. So they brought in the doctor from NSU that does first responder. He's also a hostage negotiator for the Plantation Police Department. So he was the one who did the course with other students from NSU in regards to it. And they basically teach you how to do like mirror techniques, paraphrasing, how to speak back to your peers in regards to when they're having a moment. They also give you resources on where to tell them to go if they want to talk to somebody else or if it's suicide related. So that's basically what you're doing in the 2 days, and we're doing scenarios. Some people don't like to call it scenarios. We do scenarios for the 2 days with other peers and other departments. So we had DOD in there, communications. We had admin positions also there.
I think we're seeing more and more conferences and trainings available for 911 telecommunicators. What kind of role does that play, do you think, in the kind of evolution of the industry, and especially with finding, I guess, you know, building the network, finding other tools that can help you to become a better 911 call taker and develop possibly into a leadership role? What do you think about the conferences and trainings that are available?
I think they're great. That actually is what I like to do, and it's given me that passion again, my job that I love to do. And I started APCO committee. I have a performance development there, and they're just starting on the Florida APCO also for wellness committee. That I put in for it as well to see how it does. Because we, like I said, we don't really have a lot of that in South Florida. And a lot of people, I didn't know that it existed till my last training coordinator at work. They were like, hey, you know, guys, there's 911 Wonder Woman out there. There's these Facebook group. There's conferences out there you can try. And even if your job doesn't want to pay for it, you guys should do it. And you'll see you network with other people in the 911 industry. Mm-hmm. And you'll be able to see all these things that work doesn't allow, but gives you so much back. And it really does.
I would love to ask you, what do you love about your job?
I love helping people. I do. I like, for example, for me, my brother's a cop, so I always see it on the other end when I'm on the radio to have a dispatcher that makes sure they get home. Mm-hmm. So when I was training, I was telling, that's what I would train my trainees. They look like numbers to you, but they all have families to go to. So at the end of the day, when I take my headset off and they all went home, I know I did a good job. That's what matters to me.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, I find this fascinating too. Can you kind of take us inside your head when you're at work, and are you seeing anything visually? Are you getting any kind of like, you know, advanced camera stuff from the field, or is it all radio, telephone, audio type stuff? And if
it's
that's
just
the case,
telephone and radio.
Yeah.
So unless we see a chase on the news and it's on TV, time we see. When we were in our old building, our aviation unit had the camera, and we had an access to it. And when they moved us regionally into three buildings, we didn't have the PAPA unit anymore and the vision. So I was like, man.
So with your process when you're taking a call and dispatching the units, how are you painting a picture in your mind of what's going on scene? Obviously, you just have to kind of take what you're getting, you know, being told and figure it out, like visualize it. What kind of talk us through what that looks like in inside your head?
Well, technically, if you know the area, you can kind of, I guess, paint that picture clear when they give you a location, if they're telling you they're out of business,
right,
and stuff like that.
Josephine, how do you cope with not knowing the outcome of a call? You know, you dispatch police, fire, ambulance, you know it's a serious situation. And then you may not hear what happened. So how do you deal with that?
I take it like another day. That's how I have to do it. Because not always it's on the news. So sometimes I'll try to go back on the call when I come back the next day and see if anybody wrote any notes. Sometimes the officers will write notes from the reports into the calls, or the dispatcher will write what the officer stated during the time they were on the call. But it's not always the case. So sometimes you are left with the unknown, because we do over 30 cities. Mm. So it's not easy to get a lot of feedback from the road.
Sure.
I think it's one of the hardest things as a first responder. You know, it was hard for me, probably for David too at times. You just don't know. You don't get that closure. So that's why when we do get closure, or we do get contacted by a family, or someone lets us know what happened, whether it was good or bad, it gives you finally a little piece of closure, even if it's just one once in a great while. It's enough, I think, for us to hold on to and keep that hope going for the future. And you know you're making a difference, but I think in those moments that closure is so golden.
Yeah, it's probably easier in a smaller agency, smaller community, and as opposed right. to a countywide service where, as you said, was it 30 different towns?
Yeah. 30 cities. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, even imagine some shifts. I mean, people are doing 20, 30 calls a shift in some places. So there's no time to think about closure or your feelings. But I would imagine listening to you talk, Josephine, that some of those pictures that you're filling in with your brain, it's long after your shift when you have that quiet time.
Yeah, it is. And sometimes I'm talking, my wife says I talk in my sleep. She's like, you're dispatching like a whole call sometimes. And I'm like, what?
Wow. Yeah.
Okay.
But that's your subconscious working out
right.
what you unfinished. Saw during the day. Yeah.
Yeah. Unfinished business. So
it's incredible.
Please give us a little more information about Latinas of 911. How can people find you? Website, socials, and we were talking earlier how you have some new swag, and where can they find that?
I have Latinas of 911 website at www.latinasof91.com. I have Instagram, and I also have a Facebook group, Latinas of 911. I just started the Shopify store. For the t-shirt, if you're interested, they're 25. And that's how I'm trying to build income and to help into training if anyone wants to do other certifications and help mentoring as well. So hopefully one day I'll get to do something with Sarah, 911 Wonder Woman on the software and some training. I did their leadership training. It was amazing seeing all of them and hearing each story, where they came from. Some were directors, some were actually did the job, and they went into the private sector, and they're doing other things now to help 911 operators, which is great.
It's wonderful what you're doing, and to represent a group within a group that gets forgotten a lot, and we're really inspired to see what you're doing, and I have the feeling you're going to have a lot of great things in the future, so good for you for standing up and having the courage to start the group and also to talk openly about your life.
Thank you.
Josephine, thank you. Again, you've really shined a light on stuff that, particular aspect of our business, our industry that we obviously need to be looking at more. And that's the call takers, the dispatchers, and the mental health aspect of it. So we appreciate you sharing all of that with us today and wish you continued success with Latinas at 911.
Thank you, David.
And I just want to add, 911 operators are the first responders and I think do get left out. And so because you're so focused on the mental health and longevity, of 911 operators, I appreciate that. And I think a lot of people do.
Thank you.
Remember to like and subscribe. Our YouTube channel is Responder Resilience. We're on Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc., and Responder TV, bbsradio.com, all the podcast platforms, and visit our website, respondertv.com, for past episodes and guest information. Until the next time, stay safe, be kind to yourself, take care.